This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 a.m. You are listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wong Xiaoning. We are turning our attention now to what's happening over in the world's most populous country, namely India. It saw its GDP in the last 3 months of 2023 rise by 8.4% on a year-on-year basis, surpassing all forecasts. Looking ahead to the current financial year that started on the 1st of April, the country's central bank expects the economy to grow at 7%.
And today, the world's largest democracy entered into the second of the seven phases in its parliamentary elections, with the election outcome slated for early June. So what are the set of challenges awaiting the incoming government of India, and can it hit all the right economic notes this year and beyond?
All right. For some thoughts on what's happening with India's economy, we speak to Sanjay Mathur, Chief Economist for Southeast Asia and India of ANZ Bank. Sanjay, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. The IMF raised India's GDP forecast to 6.8% for 2024 to 2025. Are you similarly positive about the country's economic momentum?
Good morning. Yes, we are quite positive. And if anything, the IMF forecast is, in our view, slightly on the conservative side. You'd much rather go with the RBI's forecast of 7%. And there's quite a few things that are happening in the Indian economy. As you know, there is a Make in India campaign, which is targeted at increasing the share of manufacturing in GDP, services exports, and that really relates to global capability centers, increased outsourcing by multinationals of the logistics works, etc. You've got a big thrust on infrastructure spending and the digital initiatives of the government. All that is really giving you a lot of stimulus to the economy. And we think 7% could be quite easily achievable this year.
But the Reserve Bank of India has even more ambitious goals. I think they say that the economy needs to grow at a rate of 8 to 10% per annum, over the next decade to reap the demographic dividend. Can this be achieved? Is it too lofty a target?
I think it's too early to say whether it can be achieved or not. So far, where we think the economy can grow somewhere between 7 and 7.5%, 8 to 10%. At this stage can probably be achieved over a couple of years, but then after that, it would probably give rise to inflation, external imbalances, etc. So at this point in time, I cannot say that all decks are cleared for 8 to 10% GDP growth.
If we take a look at how the RBI is going to determine its monetary policy, we saw it keeping rates steady at 6.5% earlier this month, but stuck to its hawkish policy tone. How much of its direction is going to be in coordination with U.S. monetary policy? And what does that mean for when it will finally start to cut rates?
So the first thing is that we do not think that monetary policy in the U.S. has much of a bearing on monetary policy in India. And the primary reason for that is that India's external buffers are very good now. So FX reserves are about $650 billion, and that gives you a lot of flexibility on monetary policy. We do expect that rates would be cut somewhere in the fourth quarter of the year. But one thing that is very important at the current juncture is that the RBI is very steadfast on achieving its target of 4% inflation. And they've been candid about it. The four means four. And I think the strong growth that we are seeing gives them the luxury of waiting it out until we get to 4% inflation. So in all likelihood, the first cut should be around the fourth quarter of this calendar year.
Okay. And if we look at inflation, if the based on the consumer price index, it's down from its peak of 7.8%. Yet the target is 4%. How is that bridge going to be? How are we going to get to the other side of the bridge?
I think we've made considerable progress on inflation. I think the important getting to 4% is, which we want to call the last mile of disinflation, is proving challenging because India focuses a lot on headline inflation. And in an economy that is so large, subject to a lot of weather shocks, food prices can be very volatile. And that's what we are seeing right now, that food is having a significant impact. But nonetheless, there are also encouraging trends we are seeing. Even within that sort of spectrum of high prices, there are moderation in some of the key categories. So I guess the jury is out. In any case, even if the RBI has to delay its rate cut cycle, I don't think it's going to cause any serious damage to the economy.
So we know that India is currently having its general elections running for 6 weeks. What do you see as the biggest challenges for the government after the national election is over with Prime Minister Narendra Modi presumably re-elected to the post?
I think that the biggest challenge for India is going to be reaping the demographic dividend. And that means finding jobs for everyone. And secondly, creating a more inclusive economy. These are very difficult issues and require a lot of effort, you know, right from investing in human capital to sort of smoothing out some of the regulations around land acquisition, labor laws, to fostering or speeding up urbanization. That's going to be quite a challenging assignment for the new administration.
I have one more question on currency, though, because looking at other emerging market currencies, they've really come under pressure with the strength of the US dollar. What's the situation when it comes to the Indian rupee, though?
Well, off late, the rupee has weakened. But, of course, the kind of depreciation pressures that you're seeing on many other currencies it's just not as intense. And I think that really relates to the fact we've had some portfolio outflows. But it also suggests that the RBI is not standing in the way because that ensures relative competitiveness. Like I said earlier, that you know, with the kind of reserves buffer they have, they can easily intervene in the markets and stabilize the currency. But I think that a competitive currency is also in line with the policy objective of increasing the share of manufacturing and exports. Mm. So I wouldn't worry too much about it, and this seems to be a part of a longer-term strategy.
Sanjay, thanks very much for speaking with us. That was Sanjay Mathur, Chief Economist for Southeast Asia and India at ANZ Bank, giving us his outlooks for the Indian economy, things that the next government will have to pay attention to in order to propel India into the upper echelons of global economies.
Yeah, I mean, there is some expectation that by 2027, India will be the third largest economy, ranking after America and China. Currently, it's already the fifth largest economy. And this is because in terms of growth, they are achieving annual growth of 6-7%. But people are questioning whether they need a completely new model for this growth, right, in order to ensure that the democratic dividend is actually kind of utilized to its maximum. So it needs to focus away from just infrastructure, which has done in the last few years. I mean, think about it. They've got currently 150 airports. That's double a decade ago. They've got a lot more new highways. As much as 10,000 kilometers of roads have been added. But now they need to think about services. And I think they're embarking on that. After all, Apple is starting a new manufacturing plant there, right? Making iPhones from there. So things are definitely on the right track.
Yeah, they are indeed. And like you said, in terms of the demographics, here's some interesting figures coming from The Economist. Out of a working population of 1 billion, only 100 million or so have formal jobs. So that's like a huge swath there that still needs to be tapped into, brought into the formal economy. That really will help to generate the growth that they're looking for. So I think everyone's looking to see how Narendra Modi will position the policies to bring that potential forward.
Yeah, you can see the Nifty 50. Ooh, if you track it for the last 10 years, it's been a darling.
All right, it's 7:46 in the morning. We're going to head into some messages, but when we come back, we are going to be discussing FTAs, whether they bring more benefit than harm to Malaysia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.